Welcome to Witches Being Witches. Spiritual besties chatting all things stars, skin, science, sex, and self-love. I'm Tara, Ayurvedic consultant, cosmic witch, and Vedic astrologer.
And I'm Emily, qualified naturopath, holistic skin witch, and founder of natural skin and lifestyle brand, The Purist Collection.
Witches Being Witches is for the woman who is ready to reclaim her power, dares to take up space, and expresses herself fully.
A witch is a woman who embraces nature, its cycles, and knows that she is magic.
Welcome fellow witch.
We are so happy you are here.
Welcome to episode 45, Overcoming Perfectionism.
Yeah, I am excited to delve into this one. I feel like perfectionism is something that I've been very open about struggling with, and I call myself a recovering perfectionist because I think it's a bit of a journey. And I know with all of the Virgo in your chart, Tell you that perfectionism is an aspect of what's going on as well. And I think a lot of people can probably relate in some way, shape or form. And it is quite funny because when you suggested that I talk about this topic, my instant reaction was like, no, I'm not good enough. Like, I'm not perfect enough to do that episode. And I was like, okay, I feel like this is actually quite pertinent. So I think there's going to be some really lovely reminders for me as we talk through this as well.
Yeah, and I'm excited to get all your wisdom on this.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you, like you say, double Virgo, definitely need this.
Yeah. I think that perfectionism can ultimately be a really beautiful gift as well. So we'll talk more about that as we go through, but tell you what's been happening for you.
So for me, I have been doing the final planning of my Europe trip, so I'm really excited for that because many years ago I did a astrocartography session, which is the astrology by location. So it's based on vibrational match where you are, so you know, it can be better. Some areas better for health or relationships and things like that. And one of my top places to go is Spain, and I have never been before. So I've been to another highly ranked place in my astrocartography, and it was Berlin, and I actually wanted to move there. So I'm really excited to experience, how it feels to be there.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. And what about you, Em?
That's so exciting. I guess my win and challenge is kind of, again, like linked into each other, which I feel like I do say quite a lot. But recently I've kind of become, I guess, increasingly aware of my need and want to step back into my feminine more, because I think that innately and inherently I probably am better suited to that feminine, divine feminine quality of, you know, flow, creativity. And I was speaking to one of our mutual friends recently, T, who is a Reiki expert / I think quite a bit psychic, not that she would call herself that, but just magic. And she really highlighted for me again, like, that creation and creativity is really what I'm here to do. And I feel like I do know that within, but I guess society, past experiences, the way that my life has been over the last 5, 10 plus years, probably also taking into account this level of perfectionism that is there kind of underlying as like a schema that's in the background for me. I think that does kind of contribute to me trying to step into the masculine more and then feeling quite frustrated by that and feeling tired and drained by it because it's not my naturally preferred or natural flow.
Yeah.
Type, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, being in a like relatively new relationship after being so hyper independent for such a long period of time, being single, but then even in my past relationship for the majority of that, feeling like I was a completely individual entity even within that, which I think, you know, there's some level of, I will always want to be somewhat independent and still have my own identity, but I think in that case, most of the time it was, you know, like too independent, like we were two individuals just kind of, slammed together. So I've been really playing with and toying with, and I guess starting by building awareness of the fact that I am not as in my feminine as I would like to be, naturally like to be, and desire to be. So yeah, I guess starting there and then kind of feeling sometimes really overwhelmed by how I start to shift out of that. But also feeling, yeah, positive about it in some ways too. Yeah, it's just kind of a weird crossroads.
Yeah, and I think especially in the, you know, trying to get that balance in a relationship as well with those energies.
Yeah.
Is, yeah, it takes a while to get that.
Yeah.
I remember when I met my husband, I was struggling because I was so in my masculine and I had been so used to being doing everything so independently, even with my previous relationship. And yeah, my husband is very masculine, and so yeah, that wasn't going to work. But I had my accident and then my bike accident, and then I physically couldn't do anything myself. Yeah. So yeah, then it pushed me massively into my feminine. So
yeah,
let's not go to those extremes, Em.
No, yes, intercept that point, I think. Yeah. I think it's interesting because, yeah, I notice in myself that I want support, but then me accepting support is quite a different thing. So there's like that feminine side of me that wants to feel supported.
Yeah.
But then there's that like masculine energy that's quite dominant in me at the minute that's like, no, I will do everything by myself. I'm hyper independent. I don't need anyone else to do anything to help me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ask for help. Why should I have to ask for help? Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
It's just this kind of, yeah, polarity that's not very well balanced in me at the moment. And yeah, slowly but surely working on kind of getting that balance a little bit more in check, both in myself and my own purpose, and, you know, from like a career perspective and wanting to, like I said, like really step more into that creative energy and create new things and work on new things and launch new things, but also just actually enjoy creating again. Like I love writing and I love creative writing. I love being creative in so many ways. And yeah, for me, but also in that sense of in my relationship. And yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to go back and re-listen to our feminine masculine polarity
episode. I was
actually
just thinking about that because, yeah, we all need that reminder and to go back into that balance and go, yeah, where can this be more equal?
And I guess also that acceptance of understanding that it is like we're constantly in flux, right? Like there's no, we don't just stay in one level of balance the entire time.
Yeah, and like you say, like with society and what you see, it's this constant bombardment of how you should be, how you should be acting, and there's always someone with a different narrative around it. And it's, yeah, coming back to what is working for you.
Yeah, exactly. I guess this leads also nicely into my current obsession as well. So I really love working with flower essences in naturopathy. I think it's a really beautiful way to kind of like seamlessly pair together and consider like emotion and physical and the way that the two meld together, which they definitely do, especially when you're looking at things holistically. So I really love flower essences for their like really subtle but quite powerful energy and vibrational healing potential. But I actually have been taking, and I actually bought this bottle a while ago, but I have been using it again. I brought it out of my cupboard again recently, and it is it's by the Australian Bushflowers brand. So they're using, as the name implies, Australian Bushflower essences. And I am using their woman essence at the moment. So it's a blend of 10 flower essences. And it's really lovely for helping to kind of embrace that feminine more, and from kind of a multitude of perspectives and ways, but really about kind of that acceptance piece, that balance piece, especially emotionally, but also from like that female cyclical component, and not just obviously physiologically cycle, as in menstrual cycle, but also, you know, knowing that as women we are cyclical and there's going to be ebbs and flows in energy and emotion and et cetera. And just it's a really beautiful one for feeling like that real tired, weary, like, ugh. So I'm using that one at the moment and, beautiful. Yeah, helping me to kind of, yeah, start to shift things a little bit more.
Yeah, I love working with flower essences, like really working on that subtle energetic body. Like they have, yeah, really helped me shift because they can keep us in a higher vibrational state. Yes. And for, yeah, really beautiful support.
So, yeah, yeah, I think that's such a nice way to sum them up, just beautiful support. Like, yeah, they really are so lovely.
Yeah, I love that.
Talk to me about what you're obsessing over at the moment.
I am obsessing over, I would have to say over the years, Em, and we, you know, throughout all our friendship history, we've always talked about low-tox living.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm just obsessing over this at the moment even more because I've been coming really conscious about just even the little things that I'm doing, like no longer doing like nail appointments and just becoming really aware of those chemicals and those toxins in that and you know, things like my dry cleaning, so sourcing less chemical base tox, and so just things like that and really focusing on my organic produce and really seeing how I can even lower my toxin exposure even more.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's something that I've been really conscious of and just doing small things like adding mineral salts in Ayurveda. We use a salt called Soma salt and it's really high in minerals. So I'm putting that into my water. Very conscious about my water source as well. And so yeah, just really tightening up my toxin exposure.
That's so beautiful. The salt in water thing is actually really beautiful for your adrenals as well.
Definitely need that.
Yeah, it's really nice. That's so amazing. And I really like what you said about, you know, taking small steps, because I think when you start to think about how much toxin exposure we are constantly exposed to, like it can feel really overwhelming and it's almost like, oh my God, like where do you even begin? Like what is the point? But taking those small steps and controlling the things that you can control. And I guess for each person that looks different, but taking back that control. And
definitely. Yourself. Like you said, it can just be those small steps. And like quite a few years ago now, I just had this thing like I wanted to phase out all plastics in the house. And, you know, that took me like over a year to do that. And so like just having those intentions and working towards them.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. And before we dive into the episode, I also realized I need to update our witches on something which I keep forgetting to update everyone on. So for the solar eclipse last month, was a whole month ago now actually, I got my first ever tattoo.
Yes.
Yeah. I had been sitting on the idea, and I think we've actually spoken about this on the podcast before, because I'm a reflector and in human design and kind of we're always encouraged to sit on a decision for a full moon cycle, which when I almost impulsively got a tattoo at an event that Tara and I went to 2 years ago, she was like, Emily, you're a reflector, you need to sit on this. Well, I did sit on it and I sat on it for almost 2 years. Instead of a moon cycle, I sat on it for a few. And, I got my first ever fine line tattoo on my right ankle. It's a little seashell because I think, again, you probably already know this about me if you've been listening to the podcast for a while. I really love the beach. It is really my special safe space. And I really just wanted to carry that with me even when I'm not at the beach. So, yeah, I'm really loving it. Like, it feels like it belongs there and, like, it's always been there, which is good.
Yeah, we'll have to do a photo to show the witches.
Yeah.
I love it.
Thank you.
So, yeah, and I love how you took my advice to not do anything on the...
Like, oopsies.
All my really good friends, I'm like, don't do anything big on this day. And Em's like, oh yeah, that's the day I'm getting the tattoo. And I was like, yeah.
Oh. Yeah. I actually, I infused my tattoo as well with this really beautiful, I don't know if you'd call it a poem or a piece of writing by one of my very first yoga teachers ever, Tara, and another Tara. So, yeah, she had read out this beautiful piece about the ocean, and actually really interestingly links back to what I was saying before, because the ocean is like this extremely divine, powerful, vibrational, conductive expression of feminine and of the ebbs and flows of life. And yeah, she just wrote this really beautiful piece that like brought me to tears at the time when I heard it. And so I contacted her and I said, excuse me, can I please infuse that into my tattoo? And
that's so beautiful, Em. And your Pisces rising, which is the fish, but it's also the mermaid, the half goat, innovative half goat, half mermaid. So there's such this strong connection between you and the ocean.
Yes.
And yeah, so I think that's really, really beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm excited by it. All right.
Get into this episode.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I need this.
Yeah. And I think, like I said, me too. Like I think, yeah. Hopefully everyone benefits a little bit from this. So I wanted to start off by kind of defining perfectionism and what it is, because I think the word gets thrown around a lot and we talk about perfect and perfectionism, but really it's this tendency to set really high, unrelenting standards, both for ourselves but also for all of the different aspects of our life as well. And we look at perfectionism and like I said, ultimately I think it can be quite a gift, but there are also quite a few really obvious downsides to perfectionism. And I think these are the reasons that ideally we do want to start to work to overcome it. And really, because the concept of this constant pursuit of the idea of perfect and that concept of perfect, like... what is perfect to me is going to be different to what is perfect to you. It's so subjective. Again, the idea of perfect is going to change from person to person, but also situation to situation. And ultimately, like, there's always room for improvement and there is always a different perspective on something. And so I think really this constant pursuit of perfect is a constant pursuit of something that doesn't even really truly exist. Mm-hmm. Like, it's unattainable. And it's never ending. So it's really a way to set ourselves up for feeling frustrated and anxious and exhausted or even completely burnt out, and really compromising our sense of self-worth as well. So in today's episode, I really want to talk about how perfectionism really comes about and how it starts, and talk about kind of the psychological perspectives there, and how it really impacts us, and then most importantly how we can start to work to overcome it and really start to embrace our imperfections. And I know that sounds really cliche, but please bear with me, and I want to give you some really practical tools there as well. So when we look at perfectionism and how it originates, it very often stems from our childhood and or from a need for control. And I think ultimately, in both senses, it's really as that form of protection. And when we think about our ego, it's that part of our psyche that's mediating between our inner and outer world and what we want from an inner perspective, those inner desires, and what's happening in the outer world. And ultimately, our ego is there to help us form and maintain our identity and to help us to cope with any challenges that come our way, ultimately. And I think from that perspective, we can kind of look at our ego as wanting to protect us. Now, schemers can be a part of our ego striving to protect us. So schemers are also known as core beliefs. They ultimately serve as these mental shortcuts to help us make sense of the information that we're receiving And we're obviously constantly receiving information. And so our schemas are there to kind of help to very quickly allow our brains and conscious thinking to kind of make sense of that. And they are ultimately going to influence our perceptions and our emotions and our behaviours. So those mental shortcuts very often then lead to patterns. Now, in the case of perfectionism, usually the dominant schema is one called the unrelenting standards schema. Now, this is really characterized by that very rigid, perfect set of standards that are set by the individual, both for themselves and for others and for situations and anything else that they feel they would like to control and make perfect. So it looks like very, very high expectations, and it also looks like very often feeling left, like you're struggling with feeling really disappointed and frustrated because inevitably those expectations are not always going to be met. So then we start with the negative self-talk. We start to feel anxious. We can start to feel depressed. We can have a really hard time switching off and relaxing, which newsflash, also not going to feel amazing. We're going to really struggle to celebrate anything that we actually do achieve or accomplish. We are going to become really overly critical, and again, particularly of ourselves, and we're going to feel really inadequate. We're just going to constantly feel like we are not good enough. We're never good enough. We're never perfect enough. We're never doing things to that perfect standard. Now, this schema, as with all of the other schemas that there are, and there are many, it develops for a variety of reasons. And the most obvious are A, your upbringing, B, your personality and your personality type, and finally our experiences. And I was talking before about our ego, but that ego's perception and way of understanding those experiences. So, for example, when I'm explaining how schemas begin from a kind of experience perspective, I very often give the example of you're a child at 3 years old playing in the sandpit, and all your friends are playing with you, and then suddenly they all get up and leave. Now, you don't have any way of kind of understanding what happened there. Why did they leave? And maybe your ego jumps to the conclusion of, well, you're not fun to play with. They don't like you. You're not pretty enough. X, Y, Z. That's your ego making sense of something. And I probably didn't give the best example by saying three, because I think could definitely happen at three, but I guess that was maybe not the best example. But yeah, really that ego perceiving our experience, again, by way of protecting ourselves, but also making sense of what has happened to us. Now, this unrelenting standard schema is also known as a life trap. Any schema can also be referred to as a life trap because it traps us, as the name implies. And really, the core message here of this schema is I have to work really hard to meet these extremely high standards so that I won't be criticized or judged or viewed as less than by other people. So therefore, I don't have time to relax. I don't have time to have fun. I must always be efficient and I must always be productive. And really driven by that word should. And this is something that I've quite often pull my clients up on when they come into a consult and they say, oh, I should be doing this. I should be doing this. I know I should be doing this. That use of the word should, very often associated with perfectionism and unrelenting standards. Now, in childhood, this can start to develop, again, due to either a combination of factors or individual factors, such as one or both of our parents or our caregivers having really very high standards and modelling them to us. Now, whether they imposed them on us or not, if they were modelling them to us, that can still have initiated that in us. And I think I can definitely relate to this one because my mum is like a classic representation of perfectionism, I think, and she never imposed them on me. I was very lucky to have parents who were always very supportive, but she did model them to me. in herself and the way that she spoke to herself and kept the house, etc. It might have started in childhood for others if we had to perform to feel loved by our parents. So our parents' love or caregivers' love was conditional. It might have come from our parents or, again, caregivers teaching us that our character should be defined more by our achievements than by our qualities. It could have come about if our parents were hypercritical or didn't offer us encouragement. It could have come about from our parents or even our teachers or like coaches or anyone else kind of criticizing or shaming us for not achieving or not being good enough. And I think that's a really big one because, again, not just our parents but so many people in society.
Yeah, and what's coming to me is I'm just reflecting religion.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Such a big one because how I was brought up in that religion, like relentless like standards.
Yes.
And yeah, like it's undoing all of those. But as well, I'm really interesting to hear down the track. I was thinking modeling as well, that deportment and, and having to be a certain way and do do things a certain standard and those kind of institutions that are really like driving those things.
Absolutely. And yeah, I think you raise a really good point there where even the media.
Yes.
And I think this is going to become more and more of a problem because we look at, you know, like we've spoken about, like the filters on social media and how easy they are to access for even really quite young children. Like looking at yourself with a filter and then swapping back to how you look as a normal human being.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of imposing that sense of an unrelenting standard. Like that's not real.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
But it's telling us that you're not pretty enough with your face as it is.
Yeah,
like we need to use a filter to completely remodel the whole way our face looks.
Yes.
Like there's, yeah, you're so right. Like that the institutions and authority figures telling us that we're not good enough and more so actually like criticizing or shaming us for it is when it particularly becomes a massive issue. And then finally, we might have developed these standards for ourselves because we really struggled to really deeply connect and form relationships with other people. So again, we've then kind of made sense of that. Oh, okay, well, it's because I'm not good enough or I'm not perfect enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not X, Y, Z enough. And that's obviously why I'm not able to connect with other people. So I'm going to have to work harder. I'm going to have to overachieve to get their acceptance. A few things penny dropping there. And that's, I think, why I really wanted to talk about, and I'm not a psychologist and I don't pretend to be, but I think it's really important to take into account those psychological perspectives and understandings of how things like perfectionism and schemas generally play out.
Yeah, and how it can be a little bit sneaky because when you're talking about that needing to be efficient and productive every like second of the day, I was just going, working on that one.
Yes.
But that I wouldn't have necessarily said to you, I didn't see that as perfectionism, but like putting it in that lens, like, yes, I can understand it's how that can become
standard.
Yeah, it is those very high expectations. But I'm interested to see more of the positive aspects because, yes, I have very high standards.
Yeah.
But it's like, where am I applying those?
Yes, exactly. And are you using them to in the pursuit of perfect? And is that attainable and realistic?
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about how perfectionism can really impact us from a body perspective, a physical body perspective. Because schemas and life traps and limiting beliefs and thoughts and patterns about emotions and how we make sense of those can also really impact our physical health. Now, the first and most obvious way is stress and anxiety, which we know can impact our body. And we talked a lot about this in our Nurturing the Nervous System episode. So if you haven't listened to that one, I think that is one of our most important episodes to listen to. So definitely go back and listen to that one and we'll chuck a link in the show notes as well so you can access that nice and easily. Stress and anxiety can become really quite chronic, and stress and anxiety can be feelings, but when they become chronic or problematic, they kind of then cross over into that stress or anxiety disorder territory. Now, our negative emotions and an ability to process them healthily can really then impact our release of stress hormones like cortisol. And again, long-term cortisol elevation is not going to impact us very nicely. Being in a constant state of stress, and in this sense I'm talking about stress from the perspective of that stress response being constantly activated and constantly telling us that we need to fight, flee or freeze, that real sympathetic nervous system response to stress. And again, that stress can be mental, emotional, physical, it can even look like inflammation. All of those are going to gear into telling our nervous system that it needs to be on high alert and that we're not safe and that we need to be geared up purely to survive. Now, being in that state constantly really impacts our body in so many ways, but the most obvious is that it really impacts our immune system. So our immune health hits the gutter, really poor gut health, and the gut-brain connection is so important, and gut health generally for everything is so important. I think really that is key. It can also impact our reproductive health. It can cause hormonal imbalances, and especially as women, that presents a lot of issues. It can really disturb our sleep, and we know that if we're not sleeping well, again, it really doesn't help with feelings like stress and anxiety. So yeah, massive impacts on the body. I also wanted to talk a little bit about the manifestation of physical symptoms from schemas like unrelenting standards and perfectionism. I've spoken about this many, many times before, that our underlying our kind of physical ailment, whatever it might be, is very often, if not always, some kind of mental or emotional or spiritual component. Now, in the unrelenting standards perfectionism schema, this could often show up in the gut and in that digestive system, because there's a real fear of failure and a real need for control. So a good example here, and one I speak to my clients about who are impacted by constipation is really a sign that we need to let go of some very rigid beliefs and standards that we have. We quite literally, for want of a better term or word here, we need to let some shit go on many levels, but including that emotional perspective. There's also, and I've spoken about this before, in acne, and this is one that I can definitely relate to because I struggled really badly with acne, particularly as a teen when really these schemas were becoming their most obvious, and I was really, really struggling with anxiety disorder, and I was struggling with depression as well. Acne is very often a representation of the belief that we are not enough. And again, that perfectionism, unrelenting standards schema is constantly telling us that we're not enough, and then we're just stuck in this loop. But other skin conditions as well, that real sense of not being comfortable in our own skin, and again, not feeling enough, not being perfect enough, and really needing to work and achieve for acceptance, can massively show up in the skin. Can also show up as eating disorders or disordered eating, so even like binge eating, or in a lesser perspective, and I'm not saying that this is an eating disorder, but I think in some ways not an overly healthy way of eating when we are constantly counting calories and tracking and logging every single piece of food that's coming into our body. Like, yes, I think there are ways that can be helpful and supportive of our health and well-being, but I think quite often, especially if there is already this underlying issue from an emotional belief, behavioural perspective, can become really problematic.
Because it's that control element.
Exactly.
Like you can control that.
Exactly. Yep. And this, it does present as eating disorders because of that excessive focus on our body image coming from that need for control and that body, image and body being something that we can control quite easily. In some ways. And again, is that a good or a bad thing? I think it depends. And obviously if it's disordered, no, not so much.
Yeah, and I think it can obviously present in both ways. Em, like that's something in my younger years I really struggled with. Mm. And I would weigh my food, yeah. And I was very hyper focused on that.
Yeah.
But now, and that has taken me really years to work through.
Yeah.
And now I have such a healthy relationship with food. Yes. I eat like really good quality, and but I'm not like I would deny myself things absolutely. Like all the time, like that I'm not worthy of having that treat, like I don't deserve that, which was really interesting. And now like I allow myself, but that was like a massive process.
And I think again, like society and the generations that have come before us of women and standards of society and the media, social media, etc. now is it's so enforcing of that. And I think it's something that we really have to be conscious and aware of, and something that I know I'm really conscious and aware of modeling in future generations. And again, like through modeling, my healthy behavior with food and with my appearance. And again, Tia, I can totally relate. I went through patches of tracking my food, tracking my exercise, working out how many calories were coming in and out. I mean, I was 15 and my metabolism was amazing. So that was really not something that I needed to do, and became really problematic for a while there. And again, it took years to kind of step out of. And again, now, I'm a lot less strict to myself. I don't deny myself of things. And I don't punish myself. I don't label foods as good or bad.
Yes, I'm with you on that.
I think we could do a whole episode on that, really, and probably should. We'll note that down. Mm-hmm. Note ourselves. Chronic pain as well is a really common physical manifestation and a symptom manifestation of this unrelenting standards perfectionism schema as well. So if you're constantly having headaches or even conditions like fibromyalgia where there is that chronic pain present. And then finally, again, really obviously, anxiety and insomnia, not being able to sleep properly, again, for quite obvious reasons there. I also wanted to talk about the way that physically this unrelenting standards schema shows up in our health behaviours. And I think this actually links really nicely, again, to what we were saying before about the way that we were eating food and the way that we do eat foods, but also just the way that we treat our bodies from a really big picture perspective. And again, this is something that I do talk to some of my clients about. If we believe that we are not worthy, that we are not good enough, that we are not perfect enough, that we are not, again, XYZ enough, we are a lot less likely to feel that we deserve good health, that we deserve to feel good. And deserve to feel healthy and vivacious and amazing. So therefore, we're a heck of a lot less likely to actually have the motivation to take care of ourselves properly. We are not going to have much motivation to get the rest that we need. Again, if we have unrelenting standards, like resting is not conducive to meeting unrelenting standards. We're probably going to be a lot less likely to exercise, or similarly, and again, with that eating piece, we're going to over-exercise. We are less likely to be eating well. And again, the two spectrums of that, or two ends of the spectrum of that, I should say, we're a lot less likely to invest in our self-care. Like if you don't believe that you are worthy of something, why would you do any of those things? And actually, I think that last point, the investing in self-care piece, is something that I still have to be a bit conscious of now. I was talking to my friend recently because I went for a massage just to relax. And I was telling my friend that I was going, and I caught myself as I was talking to her. I was leaving her a voice note, and I said, because it was not that expensive, and you know, I got
justifying got this cheap. It,
yeah, and you know, like, I need it because you know I've been quite stressed lately, and blah 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 blah. And then I actually stopped myself, and I was like, sorry, I don't know why I'm justifying this to you. Like, I'm going for a massage,
yes,
because I'm caring for myself.
You're really good at this, and because the other day I said to you, oh, I was going to get a facial and I was going to move it because something with work came up, and you were like, no, don't do that. So yeah, I love that you embrace that, and it's important.
Thank you. And yes, I think I'm very good at supporting others to do it, and I do just need to remind myself to also support myself doing it. And, you know, I was talking about the way, you know, those schemas impacting the way that we treat our bodies, and we're less likely to do the things that are supporting us of having amazing health and feeling amazing because we don't feel that we're deserving of being amazing. So then on the flip side, we are possibly then more likely to engage in behaviors that are a lot less healthy, or even addictive, and I think ultimately distracting behaviors. And they are, you know, when we are presented with something that doesn't feel nice, that feels uncomfortable, that is hard to sit with, as humans, and I think it's human nature, we want to escape that. We want to distract ourselves from feeling yuck. But as we've also mentioned before, and as I did talk about in that nervous system health episode, and I think even in my anxiety episode, our emotions can be felt in our body for 90 seconds and then they pass. But so often, so many of us, and again, this is not a criticism, and again, something that I have to be careful of, and I think I'm mainly talking to myself here, but I know other people will probably relate to this. Like, it's human nature to want to escape that. So I don't have any judgment or criticism of me doing it, but I know that quite often me distracting myself to help me cope is not always the most productive, or you know, and ironic that I say productive when I'm talking about the unrelenting standard schema, but it's not helpful. It's not helping me. And sometimes it's not a super unhealthy thing, but other times it could be. And for a lot of people, you know, that distraction and escapism piece could be something like binge eating. It could be something like overeating. It could be smoking. It could be drinking in excess. Whatever it might be. Again, if we don't feel that we're deserving of health, why would we choose to take steps towards feeling really healthy and well and amazing? Now, before I give some thoughts and perspectives and some tools that we can use to start to overcome perfectionism, I do also really want to talk about adaptive versus maladaptive perfectionism. I want to pitch the idea to you that perfectionism can be a spectrum. And ultimately, our aim is to move to the adaptive end of perfectionism. So I've spoken about overcoming it, overcoming perfectionism. I think, again, something that I need to be aware of when I talk about perfectionism is that can have a tendency to view perfectionism similarly to a lot of other things in my life as a something that I need to fix, something that I need to correct about myself because I have unrelenting standards naturally. Instead of thinking about it as something that I need to overcome, can I accept it that I am a perfectionist? And can I start to move towards adaptive perfectionism instead of looking at it as a problem that I need to fix and solve and overcome and treat and sort out and get rid of? Because it's a part of me, and there are factors that have contributed to that being a part of me. So when I say adaptive versus maladaptive, schemas can be adaptive. And you were saying before, there are ways that the perfectionism unrelenting standard schema can actually be quite helpful. Our schemas that are adaptive are helping us to really navigate our environment and make decisions really efficiently and effectively. However, they can also be maladaptive, particularly if they are based on negative experiences. Now, with the perfectionism and unrelenting standard schema in particular, an adaptive version of that looks like us striving for excellence. It looks like us holding really high standards and caring about what it is that we do, which I think are beautiful gifts of perfectionism. But when we are in that adaptive state of perfectionism, we're still able to maintain a healthy balance. We're still able to get rest. We're still able to look after ourselves. We're not constantly feeling frustrated and overwhelmed and exhausted because we accept that part of ourselves and we embrace the gift elements to it, but it's within balance. There is an understanding and consciousness of retaining that balance there. On the flip side, when it is maladaptive, we have those unrealistic high standards. So instead of just having high standards because we care about something, they are unrealistically high standards. We're never going to achieve them, or not always going to achieve them, which is going to make us really feel awful about ourselves. It's going to contribute to us having that really negative self-talk. We are going to be extremely self-critical, and we are going to really fear failure and rejection, which is then again going to feed back into that unrelenting standard schema. So there's two ends to this spectrum. And when we talk about, again, schemas and the maladaptive and adaptive lenses, when we're in that maladaptive state of the schema, we tend to have really maladaptive coping strategies as well. So those coping strategies that are maladaptive look like us avoiding things, potentially that we shouldn't be avoiding. It looks like procrastination, and that is a massive one for me. It looks like, again, self-criticism. It looks like us, and again, I've touched on this before, wanting to escape, either physically running away, getting away, or mentally escape. It looks like, again, binge eating. It could look like substance use or substance abuse even. Whereas when we are able to employ adaptive coping strategies, that really looks like us being able to problem solve. It looks like us being able to reach out for support when we need to, whatever that support might look like. It looks like being able to change our expectations and being able to accommodate for things. So again, understanding that we have high standards and that that is a value for us and it's an inherent part of us. But being able to accommodate those to make them realistic so that we're not setting ourselves up for a fail. It also looks like us being able to regulate our emotions. Again, I was saying before about us wanting so often to procrastinate and avoid and escape and distract ourselves, but instead being able to take control of and really regulate our emotions and look after our emotional health. And a big part of that as well is working to reduce our stress levels, really changing our behaviors, changing our lifestyle so that we're able to really look after, manage our stress, build our stress resilience, and therefore reduce the levels of stress that we're constantly working with. And then finally, adaptive coping strategies cognitively can really look like beginning to change our thoughts. And I think the first step here is really building that awareness and observing our thoughts first, and becoming aware of them, understanding where they come from. And again, I think this is why it's important that we understand where these schemas originate from so we can give ourselves some compassion. And especially, especially when we had perfectionism modeled to us, like I have a lot of compassion for my mum. I don't blame her for giving me this perfectionism aspect. You know, again, I think it can be a really beautiful gift. And similarly for her, you know, her perfectionism has allowed her to have some really amazing things happen.
Yeah, and like you say, Em, that is really modeled to us. I feel like our mothers were very similar in that way. And so it's, like you say, it's having that compassion and understanding that, and especially when it comes to, I find for us, that not asking for help, because that was really modeled to us in especially in their generation was, you know, that was the like the ultimate sin. And so, and I don't see that as much now with like the younger generation. I'm obviously generalizing here, but it's just really interesting to observe that. And like you say, when you have that lens to look through it and start being curious, like, oh, why do I feel or think that way? And like you say, as well as just having that awareness, like, oh, I just noticed that I was avoiding feeling that by going on my phone. That's that's the link, and that's the importance.
And for those of us who do have that unrelenting standard schema, again, we really want control. We fear that lack of control. And I think that a really amazing gift of becoming aware and conscious and curious, like you said, of the way that we think and why we think that way, and okay, what elements are coming in here. And again, not looking at it from a critical perspective, but it's actually a really lovely way to kind of regain some control over the way that we're thinking and our cognitive patterns.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love what you said about that working with this as well. And because, mm-hmm. I see like a lot of positives, like you've touched on. So in our work, having that detail orientated, that attention to detail.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I remember going for job interviews and they'd be like, what's your worst, the cons.
Yes.
And I would always be like, oh, I'm a perfectionist because it's like that negative good.
Yes.
Do you know
exactly.
what I mean?
Like it's a quality that I view as negative of myself, but it's going to really benefit your company.
Yes, which means you're going to be like, yeah. So it's just really interesting, but I like how you've put that lens on, how to, work with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And really, like I said, it comes down to balance. Mm. So having those unrelenting standards, or no, not unrelenting, having high standards.
Mm.
Again, because we care and understanding where our intention is, you know, our intent is around those high standards.
Mm.
Like I want to do a really good job of this because it's something that I really care about.
Yeah.
And something I'm really passionate about or interested in. But still retaining that balance and that balanced view of what that outcome means for me, but also being able to retain balance of having other healthy aspects of my life and
it's not being fanatical, like not getting to that fanatical stage, because then it becomes that massive obsession that is just going to dominate.
And that's when it really becomes maladaptive. Mm-hmm. So now I want to talk a little bit about, I guess, and again, I've called the episode Overcoming Perfectionism, but again, I want to say that in a really loving way and I guess really embracing perfectionism as well. Now, the first thing and something that's been very, very helpful for me and really, I think, kind of just summed up by what we were talking about just before, cognitive behavioral therapy. So CBT is a tool that a lot of psychologists and counselors will use when they are working with any kind of schema, but particularly helpful in this unrelenting standards perfectionism schema. CBT is a way to challenge and restructure our negative thought patterns that are associated with that schema. And again, very often that first step is literally just building awareness and observing our thoughts. So, okay, I'm actually having a negative thought here. This is part of a negative thought pattern. This is part of a belief that's not very helpful to me. And again, lovingly, this is probably something that my ego is trying to help protect me. And okay, thank you, ego, I see you there. I'm not going to buy into it. I'm not going to attach myself to it, but I see it. And then we're, as I said, with CBT and with the help of a professional who is employing CBT techniques, we're able to then not only have that awareness and understanding and observation of those thought patterns, but we're also then able to start to challenge them. So again, whether that looks like, you know, labeling your ego and saying, oh, thanks so much, perfect Emily, but I'm okay. Like I'm actually not going to do that this time. I'm actually going to go a different way today and start to restructure those thoughts as well. So I'm not good enough. Okay. I'm doing the best I can.
Mm.
And it sounds like it's such a cliche one. I think it's important.
Mm.
It also really helps to allow us to develop very realistic and adaptive standards and adaptive coping strategies, like I mentioned before. Something that really, really helped me when I was seeing my psychologist and working with CBT, particularly around my unrelenting standards schema, which my psychologist really, really, really helped me to unpack and understand for, I think, the first time, like I was finally able to put those pieces together. Even though I knew that I had, that I was a perfectionist, I'd kind of gathered that by myself, but actually starting to really unpack those unrelenting standards was amazing. Mm. And a really, really, really helpful exercise that I did and that I'd love to share with you witches is a journaling exercise around this schema. So I journaled on the following questions. First, in which areas of my life are my standards unrelenting?
Mm.
And for me at the time, I actually fished out my journal when I was doing the prep for this. Yeah. And at the time I'd written things like my career, my home, So like domestic, like my home being clean, presentable, etc. My financials and my relationships. I had really unrelenting standards around all of those areas and more. My second question was, what are the advantages of my trying to meet these standards daily? And I wrote things like, I've achieved a lot in my lifetime. I very rarely disappoint others and let them down.
Mm.
And something else that I wrote was that I wrote down that others think I'm perfect or others think I'm good or capable. Mm. That was, for me, a real advantage.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Then I asked the question, what are the disadvantages? Funnily enough, I had quite a few more here than I did for the advantages. I wrote down that I was tired. I was, in fact, exhausted. I was overwhelmed. I was not having enough fun. I was always in a rush. I was always late for things. I had really high stress levels. I was extremely harsh on myself. It was contributing to my anxiety. It was impacting my relationships, including the relationship with myself. I was taking on way too much. I actually completely lost a sense of who I was because I wasn't doing the things that I loved or enjoyed or had fun doing. I was just working. Yeah. Work was my life. Achieving was my life. I had really poor self-esteem. My physical health was not great because I was not looking after myself. And my mental health was definitely not great. And that's why I was, you know, working on this. I think that was the real driver. I then asked, what would my life be like without trying to meet these standards? And this was a really lovely one. And again, I really loved reading my responses here. Ironically, my first one that I wrote was that I could get more done. Because even though I was a perfectionist and I was constantly overdoing, overachieving, overworking, constantly go, 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 actually, if I wasn't trying to meet those unrealistic high standards, I actually became very aware of the fact that I could actually get more done.
Yeah.
I could actually be more productive.
Yeah.
By not having those unrealistic, unrelenting standards. That I would have more opportunities for things. That I would allow myself more growth. That I would grow as a human. That I would actually be more successful. And again, kind of ironic. That I would feel less stressed and less anxious, obviously. That I would have more fun. That I would actually procrastinate a heck of a lot less, that my health would be better, that my relationships would be stronger, that I would have more time for myself, that I would have more time to rest, and that my life would really feel easy and free and happy. And for me, like, freedom is such a strong value of mine. And I realized not only do I want to feel free of, you know, standards from society or the patriarchy or whatever else you look at, I actually just really wanted to be free of myself and of my unrelenting standards. It's still something so that I step into. My next question in my journaling exercise was, where have these standards and this life trap originated from? And again, I gave some examples before, and I even did touch on the fact that, you know, this life trap and these standards were really modeled to me. And again, I think kind of enforced and imposed upon me also then by society, socials, etc. So my next question then was, what would others consider reasonable? And I actually also then reframed this into, what would I consider reasonable from other people? Because although I had such high unrelenting standards of myself in so many areas of my life, don't get me wrong, there are some times that I do crave control. And again, I think, you know, going right back to the beginning of this episode when I spoke about the fact that being in my masculine, like, I like things done a certain way and I expect my poor partner to meet those, and he's not always going to, again, because his idea of perfect is very different to mine.
Yeah.
But also my idea of perfect 9 times out of 10 is actually probably not realistic either. But very often, and I think as a whole, I guess because I am quite an empathetic, caring person, I would never have unrelenting standards of the people that I love in so many other ways.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a really interesting one to ponder on, and one that I definitely encourage you listening, fellow witch, if this is something, you know, a schema that you're really aware of. and the life trap that you really feel you are in? I think that is a really powerful question to ask. And then the next step in that journaling exercise was to then consider lowering my standards by even 25%. Because I think it's quite unrealistic, again, to say to a perfectionist, lower your standards by 100%. Yeah. No, thank you. I will not be doing that.
Yeah.
But okay, what about even just 25%? What about 10%? What about 5%?
Mm.
What does that look like? And what does that feel like?
Yeah.
And that really pondering good. On that. Yeah. It feels freeing. Feels nice. Feels like having a sleep.
Yeah.
And I really, really encourage you to reach out for support and help here. And I think it's really important to consider seeing a professional. And again, not because I'm saying that if you are a perfectionist and you have this unrelenting standard schema that there is something wrong with you, but instead reach out for support so that someone can help give you the tools for you to start to adapt this schema and live a little bit more adaptively, like I was saying, which I think is a really beautiful gift of CBT. And, you know, like you would see a PT or a physio for your physical health and for feeling, you know, that your muscles are good and that you're getting fit and you're feeling fit and strong, etc. Same with your mental health. Like I do still think that there's a lot of stigma around that. So I want to, look after yourself and look after your mental and emotional health and your behavioural health too. And yeah, I think CBT is amazing, particularly again for this schema. Other things that I think are really, really helpful is mindfulness and again awareness. And I think those two are so closely linked. So becoming mindful more often, and again, these unrelenting standards, you know, I like to always remind my clients, even when we're not talking about unrelenting standards, when we're talking about anything, they say that only 10% of our thinking is conscious. So it's really hard in day-to-day life when we're rushing about, we're working, we're doing this, we've got to do this, blah, 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 blah. And then adding the unrelenting standards on top of that makes day-to-day life even more challenging and consuming. To take those even small moments to just bring some mindfulness and awareness in to what's going on for you and what you're telling yourself and what you're saying to yourself. And again, really regulating our emotions and our nervous system. I think this is so important for everyone, but again, particularly in this schema, to really look after that self-regulation, that emotional regulation, and to look after our nervous system. I also think that something that is really helpful is setting very realistic goals. So I talk to a lot of my clients about SMART goals. Specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, emphasis on realistic, and then time sensitive. And when you set those goals, knowing that you have very high, perfect standards, okay, take that goal and then break it down further. Make it so that your little steps towards the ultimate goal are constantly achievable so that you've constantly got that motivation and that ball rolling so that you can momentum. Keep going.
Yeah. So important.
Yeah. Because, yes, there's going to be, and I do it too. I have that initial goal setting of, okay, I want to exercise more. Right. Starting on Monday, I'm going to be exercising 4 times a week. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go here, 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 and here. Well, then what happens if I don't do that on Monday? Then I'm a failure.
Yeah, exactly. And back to it goes back to that self-talk. Exactly. And then, yeah, there's no motivation.
No. Yep. So break those goals down, make them very realistic, and then allocate your time to tasks. Really prioritize and map out what your ideal day or week looks like. And then how you are going to dedicate time towards achieving those goals within that. And again, that I think really helps you to set realistic goals. Because if you're saying that you're going to exercise 4 times a week, but you don't have time or you don't prioritize that in your time, then it's not going to happen. It's not a realistic goal.
Yeah, so true. And this is why time blocking has really helped me, and because I was just living on this continual massive to-do list and just like my nervous system when I would look at it.
Yeah.
It just, and the time blocking allows me to get so much more done.
Yes.
And Yeah, that's been a game changer for me.
And I think within that time blocking and, you know, mapping out what that ideal day or week looks like, actually putting time in there for rest.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Which is going to feel uncomfortable. Definitely.
Putting the lunch breaks in.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 And again, within that realistic goal setting, really letting go of that rigidity in approach to achieving and overachieving. And something that I think is really beautiful here is then to constantly celebrate your progress as you are taking steps towards these goals. And again, breaking them down into tiny, tiny sub goals is constantly celebrating those. Taking those and looking at them and going, amazing, I've actually achieved something, instead of just constantly focusing on that unrelenting, potentially unrealistic end place. Because that's so overwhelming and it's hard. So really focusing here on the process and the effort that you're putting in, as opposed to that outcome at the end. Because otherwise you start to feel like that donkey with, you know, like the carrot dangling in front of it. Like that's hard and that's exhausting.
I feel like we're getting better at that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think it's nice that we can hold each other accountable to this too.
Yeah.
I really encourage you as well to challenge your self-talk. So again, once you've got that awareness, catch yourself when you use that word should about yourself. Catch yourself when you tell yourself that you're a failure, or you've not done that good enough, or you've ruined that, or you've stuffed up, or whatever it is. Think about whether those thoughts are actually really helpful to begin with. But also, are they even true? Like, would you 100% bet your life on you being 100% truly a failure? No, probably not. I hope not. So really starting to challenge. And again, I really think that the awareness and observation, and as you said, T, and I really loved that you did mention that word curiosity. I think that's a really, really beautiful place to start here. I think having self-compassion as a perfectionist and an unrelenting standard schema gal is so important. And very often for me, what I find helpful here is to think about how I would speak to a friend versus how I would speak to myself, and the standards that I expect of myself versus of someone else I love. And even if I do have those standards of them, like, I would be so upset if they thought of themselves as a failure. It would break my heart to hear that.
Yeah.
And on the moments that my friends have mentioned something like that, again, because they're humans, we're all human, it breaks my heart. I'm like, oh my God, no, you are a divine being. Like, you are amazing. You are wonderful. You are really so amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, am I amazing for doing it for myself? Something that I'm constantly needing to work on. And really accepting your imperfections. And I know we spoke about this recently, T, because we both kind of struggle with time management and
Yes.
Again, probably because a lot of this is playing out for us, because we're taking on so much and overcommitting, etc., quite often. Okay, I am not perfect at getting places on time. Is me constantly beating myself up about it going to change that? Well, no. I'm 31 and it hasn't so far. So probably not going to start tomorrow. So really having that self-compassion. And then I think having that self-compassion, and this is actually something that I spoke with my psych about recently, because I was saying to her, I'm constantly late for things. I'm constantly rushing. I'm constantly overwhelmed. I'm in a rush all the time. And if I'm not late, then I'm like massively rushing and panicking and stressing to get somewhere on time. And it's not helpful for me. And I know this is not conducive to my nervous system health. And I'm very aware of all of this and I want to start to change it. And she said, I think you need to actually just start with the self-compassion piece, because what that allows you to do is to accept where you are and be kind to yourself while you are working on changing your time management skills. But being able to change your time management when you're constantly berating yourself and constantly on the hook for something, it's not going to happen. It's, again, it's not realistic. It's not a realistic standard. I also really, really love affirmations here. Now, Louise Hay's classic, I Am Enough, is a really, 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 really beautiful one, and one that I come back to again and again and again, and such a beautiful one for this perfectionism piece. Ironically, though, also quite a hard one to sit with, I think, as well. So another one that I really, really love, and I actually had this as my screensaver on my phone for quite some time. I actually made up like a cute little graphic for it. Denise Duffield Thomas said this quote, imperfect action over perfect inaction. And I find that that applies to me so much of the time because, again, I do tend to sit in that procrastination piece because I'd rather do nothing perfectly than do something imperfectly.
Yeah.
But I'm not moving anywhere. I'm not getting anywhere from a career perspective, a life perspective, a growth perspective, a relationship perspective, any perspective. So starting to take imperfect action over perfect inaction. I really, really love that. That affirmation and that quote. And then another really beautiful one is I can lower my standards without having to feel like a failure. I can lower my standards by 25%. I'm not a failure for doing that. Yeah. There's also a really beautiful book that I want to quickly mention, Brené Brown's book, The Gifts of Imperfection. Really beautiful one. And she talks about starting to shift, again, your mindset around perfectionism and start to move towards that adaptive end of the spectrum by really embracing your perfectionism, but also your imperfection as well, and taking the gift and really seeing that as a really beautiful thing and embracing it. And she talks about, she has lots of suggestions in there, but she talks a lot about authenticity, again, that self-compassion piece, having gratitude, having intuition and faith over that need for constant certainty and constant control, like listening and checking in with, okay, what actually feels good to me? Expressing your creativity and being creative and starting to relinquish that control. And again, comes back to what I was saying at the beginning of this episode. So this is actually timed up really perfectly. Letting go of comparison and using exhaustion and productivity as a status symbol, which I think our society and modern world is like awful for.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Let's let go of that. Let's make a pact right now. Witches, hands in the middle, we're all agreeing. Exhausted and productive all the time is not a status symbol. It's not a badge of honour anymore. The end. I think forgiveness as well, forgiving yourself. And a really nice exercise here around forgiveness is letter writing. So writing a letter maybe to your parent or your caregiver who modelled this to you and forgiving them. And having compassion for them because they got this from somewhere too. And whoever modelled it to them also got it from somewhere.
Having that compassion.
You write that letter or whether you just let it go, but at least, getting it out, forgiving, really beautiful thing. And again, that's that forgiveness of self too. And then really reframing your idea of worth. And again, this might be a really nice thing to journal on, but really starting to consider about whether you do need to be perfect in order to deserve love and acceptance. And if you think that you have to be perfect in order to deserve love and acceptance, do you feel that your friends or your family or your loved ones have to be? Probably not. I hope not.
Yeah, it's that unconditional love. And I know, you know, not all of us get to fully feel like we experience that, but hopefully some of your relationships you do feel like that unconditional love,
and even just acceptance, like someone saying like I see you for who you are. And
And I think this is where that self-mastery and that self-discovery is really important, because having awareness of what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are has been really so beautiful to me, because knowing what I like, what my weaknesses are, means that if someone calls me out on them, I'm just like,
that's me.
And like before I would think about that obsessively
and take it as a criticism.
And I'm just like, that's correct.
Thank you. Thanks for noticing that. Yeah. The self-awareness, the self-acceptance, the self-love, so important. So to sum up, perfectionism is originating from our psyche trying to make sense of our experiences and making shortcuts mentally to help us make sense of our future experiences and ultimately to protect us. We have the adaptive and the maladaptive spectrum, when it comes to perfectionism. So we can still have those perfectionist tendencies, but we have to have that balance too, to really step into that adaptive place. Now, pick one or two of the little tools or techniques or skills that I've mentioned in the episode today. Just pick one or two to start with and pick the ones that really resonated with you and commit yourself to practicing them. And we'd love to hear from you over in the WBW Coven this week about which ones you really did resonate with.
Yeah, I really like those questions, yeah. Those self-reflective questions.
Yes, I might chuck the journal questions up there too. So yeah, if you're not already in the WBW Coven on Facebook, please come and join us in there so that you can see those. And then finally, again, I want to say that overcoming perfectionism, or more just accepting imperfect and moving to that adaptive perfectionism end of the spectrum, is a process. It takes time, it takes patience, it takes effort, it takes dedication. So that's why I always talk about myself as a recovering perfectionist.
Mm.
I'm not at the end of that journey.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's part of who I am, and that's okay. But I'm aware of it and I'm conscious of it, and I am constantly aiming towards keeping and moving towards that adaptive end of the spectrum.
Mm. I love that. This has been, so good, Em. I've taken a lot of away from this episode, and I'm going to do a bit more reflecting, but because I think it's important to not let this sabotage make us become stagnant. Yeah. So I really like how you've done a lot of the reframing. I think it's going to be really helpful.
Yeah, I'm glad. I really hope so. Thank you so much, as always, for listening, fellow witch. We really appreciate you being here. We also really, really appreciate when you subscribe or follow on your favorite platform, and when you leave us a rating or review. Helps us to really reach a wider audience of witches, which is one of our main goals.
Yeah, thanks for listening, fellow witch, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Witches Being Witches. Remember, happiness is the new rich. Inner peace is the new success. Health is the new wealth. And kindness is the new cool. We'll see you next episode.